The Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio for the 2021 season again, and we can't thank them enough. If you haven't considered checking out the Goal Line Club, this is really the way that you can support Gopher football, and you can know you're supporting Gopher football. So if you want to become a member or join any of their events, go to goalineclub.org. Again, that's goalineclub.org. There's going to be a tailgate for homecoming. Make sure you're there because both Ryan and I will be there. Once again, that's goallineclub.org. And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to, I can assure you, the sky is not falling as Minnesota wins their first game of the 2021 season over one of Luke's favorite teams, the Miami of Ohio Redhawks, from the MAC Conference, of which I know I slipped up on the last podcast calling them the Mid-Atlantic podcast or the Mid-Atlantic Conference, and people are like, you're an idiot, it's Mid-American. Yes, thank you for letting me know. I knew it immediately after I said it, and I didn't correct myself. So either way, Luke, 31-26, Minnesota gets their first win.
I appreciate that you changed your best, and obviously the Gophers also changed their best, getting a victory. At the end of the day, you know, they were a 20-point favorite, but it's important to get that first victory, right? Especially in a game you're supposed to win. It may not have been as pretty as we liked, especially seeing how well they played in the first half, and they stumbled out of the gate in the third quarter. But again, a win's a win, and we're not going to take that away from them. As PJ Fleck likes to say so often, you have to continue to change your best, and you have to row the boat. And obviously, this is an opportunity to do as such, Ryan.
It is. And before I get into that, I do want to say Derek Burns is not going to be with us here as we record.
Can you imagine how many people are going to shut this off after they find out Derek Burns isn't going to join and I'm going to have to comment more?
Oh, boy. We'll see how this is reflected.
I did some homework, though.
You did rewatch the game, mm-hmm. So I am incredibly intrigued to see what your takes are. Yeah, but Derek's not going to be joining us for this one. I think he'll be back for Colorado from what he told us last week, but he had some family obligations that came up. But, I mean, to your point, yeah, they were a 20-point favorite. Yes, they made it far more interesting than they ever should have because, and we'll get into it, a 20-minute stretch there to start the third quarter going into the fourth, and the guys just need to make plays, but mm-hmm. they did win. And that's where you look across kind of college football here. It was a weird week. Like Notre Dame nearly lost to Toledo.
Yeah.
Which Toledo takes Toledo's winning the game the whole time. They take the lead again with like 2 minutes left. And then to the despair of many Wisconsin fans, Jack Cohn, which is that game this upcoming week? Or is it in 2 weeks? It's the Jack Cohn revenge game when Notre Dame takes on Wisconsin at Soldier Field.
Yeah, I think it's this week. I think they play in Chicago. Yeah.
Oh, I cannot wait. I would laugh so hard if Jack Cohn is able to do that against Jim Leonard's defense. But, I mean, the point remains, yes. Was it pretty? No. Does Minnesota need to play a lot better for longer stretches? Absolutely. But we'll get into kind of the thought processes in terms of some of the weird things that happened in that game and where Minnesota needs to improve, Luke.
Yeah, so let's start on offense, Ryan. The Gophers put up 31 points. I think obviously people are going to have concerns about the pass game because they didn't complete a pass in the second half. Tanner Morgan ended up being 8 of 17 for 112 yards and 2 touchdowns. Trey Potts carried the load with 34 carries, 178 yards and 2 touchdowns. Dalen Wright again was the keyed in target number 1 with 3 receptions, 73 yards and a touchdown. All in all, Ryan, it's really kind of a bipolar game for this Gopher offense. First half, in my opinion, I would give them, looked really good, looked efficient. And you know, they ran into plus one boxes with success. They continue to do that, but they mixed in enough pass to keep everything honest and found open receivers, resulting in 8 completions and 2 touchdowns. And then all of a sudden you come to the second half and it's a totally different story. So let's kind of take this in a story in 2 parts. Okay. Let's start with the first half and right out of the gate, a 7-play 42 yard drive off of the turnover, sets them up for a Trey Potts 4-yard touchdown run. And frankly speaking, it felt like from there, the route was on. And I think one thing I want to make sure is clear. I think that the infiltration of betting has set up some really weird expectations that people have about outcomes of games. And they're so focused on the spread that in this situation, when the Gophers don't win by 20 or more, you feel like it's a failure. When at the end of the day, winning is the most important part. But again, the offense got off to a quick start, thankfully, thanks in large part to that turnover. And then your expectation is this is going to be a blowout. And the reality just wasn't the case. But the first half, again, was really solid.
Yeah, I mean, before I get in, I mean, what part do you want me to talk? You want me to just do play calling to start? Because I feel like that's probably the biggest thing between half number one and half number two.
Yeah, I think we should talk about play calling mostly.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, I was a fan of Sanford in the first half. I really was. I mean, you saw that. I mean, for Minnesota to call, I think they called like 60-40 run pass. That's pretty good for Minnesota. I mean, especially in a game where, again, you're up by double digits for most of that first half. And I thought, again, I don't have really anything bad to say about the play calling in the first half. I thought it was fine. I'll tell you this much. If I ever have to see the Wildcat again, I'm not going to have a lot of nice things to say, because there's, without Seth Green, I don't know what the point is. It's not a Wildcat at that point. You have no threat to pass the ball.
Yeah, and I talked about that last game. There was at one point, I think, when watching the game back, that Tanner Morgan was split out wide, like, you know, basically standing on the boundary, and they literally didn't even put anybody within like 15 yards of him. That's how much they didn't respect it.
And that's where, like, in the second quarter when Minnesota, I think, it stopped on a third down, Tanner Morgan's out wide. The corner isn't even like halfway out, and Morgan's like looking to the sidelines like, what do you want me to do here? And they just throw the house. I mean, they literally throw 10 guys with one guy over the top, and it's a tackle for loss. I mean, without Seth Green there, or even the threat of passing the ball, I have no idea what the point of Wildcat is, because you have two guys just immediately pin their ears back off the edge, and Trey Potts is standing like, what do you want me to do? They're not reading the read option. They're just saying, hey, let me pin my ears back and let's meet at the quarterback as quick as we can, Luke.
Well, and here's also the thing that kind of drives me a little bit nuts with this whole situation. I think you have to have a threat to throw. And I kind of like what Miami of Ohio did, bringing in, I forget the bigger quarterback's name, but the one that was like 230 pounds. Obviously you knew he was going to run, but obviously he also can throw. Like, if you're going to run something like a Wildcat, we've heard how good Coughlin's cousin's name? It's escaping me at the moment. Cole Kramer.
Well, that's where I'm trying to lead this into, is I know for a fact that Cole Kramer was used in a Wildcat type of package. And now it's not even a Wildcat package at that point. It's, hey, I'm willing to have this quarterback take some abuse in terms of being able to run the ball 3 to 5 times a game. And if he gets hurt, he gets hurt. Like, why not just at this point, if you want to keep that package in the game with the 6, 7, 8 O-line and Cole Keefe out there, just put Cole Kramer in there and Cole Kramer is essentially like an inch taller than what the running backs are. Mm-hmm. I would argue he's as athletic as some of them. Mm-hmm. And I think he is physical as a runner. So I don't understand the Wildcat if you're just going to throw Potts and you're going to throw now Bryce Williams back there, because you have no threat of running. And if Minnesota keeps it in the playbook here going into Colorado, they have to pass out of it in this next game, or else I don't understand.
Can we also just highlight the fact that while Mo Ibrahim was an incredibly good, you know, inside zone runner, he was also incredibly good at blocking in the Wildcat. And I'm not saying that, you know, that's what the shortcoming is in this situation. But I was not terribly impressed with Bryce Williams, you know, throwing his shoulder in there. But generally speaking, I'm not a huge fan of this approach with the Wildcat. You're so one-dimensional and predictable. I think a lot of what frustrates me as the game goes on is just how predictable the Gophers get. You know, they did run into plus one boxes, but at least they were trying to take what the defense gave them in the first half. You know, I thought that the second drive was probably their most impressive drive of the game, that ended in the 25-yard pass from Tanner Morgan to Dalen Wright for the touchdown. You know, that spanned eight plays over 89 yards and only took about 4 minutes. 4 minutes off the clock. Like that was really a pretty impressive drive to me. And ultimately, you know, when we get into the second half, like it's like a totally different mindset, and we've just basically thrown the game plan out the window.
It truly is like a tale of two halves. And to go back to your Dalen Wright touchdown one, I mean, we've talked about a lot on this podcast how Fleck loves to call timeouts on like third and long in opponent territory.
Mm-hmm.
And then how many times have we seen him run like outside zone?
Yeah.
And it's like, really? And then he finally just is like, what do you got, Mike? And he dials up the perfect play call because Dalen Wright, if you haven't watched the GIF rewinds yet on Gopher Illustrated, is wide the F open in the middle of the field. It's the perfect route for the coverage that he thought that Miami was going to run. Tanner makes a good pass, and it's a touchdown. And then you get to the second half, and everybody decides to drop the ball. Minnesota doesn't complete a forward pass, and some of our listeners think Tanner Morgan sucks, which to those of you who think that, you're wrong. Number two, PFF also agrees that you're wrong, because, Luke, I don't know if you read the PFF grades from today.
I didn't.
Tanner Morgan was the top-graded Gopher on offense.
Interesting.
That does not surprise me one bit from rewatching that game.
So, like, okay, let's actually, I want to look at, you know, how we made this change after the, you know, a pretty successful first half. I think this was the tipping point. Okay. So the Gophers first possession, they receive the opening kick, if I remember correctly, right? In the second half,
Minnesota did. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So here you go. Here's the first, and this is a three and out, keep in mind. The Gophers are 6 versus 7 in the box. They go RPO, and there's a drop by Brown Stevens. Ball's correct. More or less on the money. Should have been intercepted, caught. Right? It should have been caught, then also should have been intercepted. Okay, then yep. They go 6v6, and to me, I look at this play and they go, okay, they're going to run it. Instead, they ran a swing pass, which was just kind of poorly executed and tipped at the line.
It was open. The issue was the defensive end on Sam Schluter's side, so the left side where he's trying to throw the swing pass to, just immediately, and I don't remember seeing this for most of his pass rushes during that game, he immediately flies up the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like just, and then Tanner tries to throw the swing pass, and the guy gets his hand up, deflects it. And luckily it's an incomplete pass and not a backwards pass or a fumble.
Yeah. And it was there. I agree. But it was poorly executed in that Tanner couldn't get it over him. And, you know, somebody didn't knock that defensive end over. And then, okay, then third down, you go 5 versus 6. And at this point, you're at 3rd and 10. They stunt, right? Bryce Williams flows the wrong direction, ends up in a sack. And at that point, they've gone, you know, three straight passes, which has to... It just has to irk him. And then what does that mean going forward?
Yep.
Literally, we more or less abandoned the pass. And literally, every single... I'm trying to see if there's literally an even box the rest of the way.
Well, I can tell you, the next drive, after Minnesota throws it three straight times, what does the head coach tell the offensive coordinator to do?
Yeah.
Mike, you're going to run the ball. So Trey Potts, and then Tanner kept it. Of which, by the way, I'm going to keep coming back to Tanner. I am sick and tired of people saying that Tanner doesn't run the ball.
Yeah.
I think Tanner, and we can come back to that because it comes into play here in the fourth quarter, where because Tanner had run the ball, whether designed or not designed a few times, Trey Potts scored a touchdown on that.
Mm-hmm.
But that, to Luke's point, second drive to start the second half, Trey Potts up the middle, Tanner Morgan, Trey Potts up the middle, Potts up the middle, Potts up the middle. Then mix in Cam Wiley that doesn't go anywhere. And then on 3rd and 9, Fleck says, fine, you can pass it. Dalen Wright, once again, wide open in the middle of the field. And I remember watching this live. He's just running like a post. 10 yards, breaks towards the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
He trips on his feet. As he makes the cut, he starts to stumble. Morgan throws the ball. He continues to stumble, nearly still completes it as Dalen Wright is falling to the ground. If Dalen Wright catches that, and again, have it on the GIF Rewind, a Gopher Illustrated for you paying members, please watch those. I feel like there's a lot of good information in there. It's him one-on-one with a safety, and if he makes a miss, it's a long touchdown. Mm-hmm. But Dalen trips over his feet, and it's an incomplete pass. And what does Minnesota have to do, Luke? They have to punt the ball, and the head coach is still not thrilled with the inconsistencies of his receivers.
Yeah. That drive actually really started off well, right?
It was fine. Yeah. I mean, they were moving the ball.
They're moving the ball. They do this thing too, where they motion, the short side receiver, to the wide side of the field. And then they end up kind of clearing out, right? And then they run to the short side of the field because that typically, obviously, that shows the coverage. But two, it also can either clear out that DB or get a smaller person on the corner if they're playing zone. And they've run that successfully. I'm curious to see in future games if they actually throw to that motioning receiver, because I do think they've shown just enough tape where they run inside zone to the short side of the field where they'll have him open in the flat, in more or less unaccounted for. I think that's something they might be setting up, but
or just like a pop pass or a jet sweep out of it, just to make sure you make that edge defender honor that, because if he doesn't and he sucks too far inside,
mm-hmm.
if you get a block on the edge from your other receiver who's out there, you should be off to the races.
Yeah, but where that drive kind of stumbles again, Cam Wiley, his thing's supposed to be outside zone, but it's so slow. He either just needs to, like, to me, he just needs to pick a hole and go, right? Even if it's not there, he's just got to go like full speed ahead. But he just kind of tiptoes a little bit too much for my liking. And you're right. At the end of the day, the right stumble and drop killed that drive. And, you know, that kind of stuff happens. But to me, that's not a reason to abandon the pass, because they had the opportunities there. But again, they more or less do abandon the pass from that point out. And
they throw the next series, Tanner's first ball gets Dalen Wright absolutely obliterated.
Yeah.
I mean, back when I was playing, we called it a suicide ball because you were just going to get obliterated, and he got some bruised ribs, couldn't breathe well, held him out the rest of the game. I don't anticipate Dalen Wright missing much time. If any, I personally, from what I've heard, expect him back for Colorado this weekend, which is good news. But it's another ball that Dalen probably should have caught, but he alligator armed it. Again, I wouldn't have thrown it. It's a poor decision by Tanner Morgan. You heard me. I criticized the quarterback. But the last 16 plays on offense, it's 13 straight runs, and then you kneel it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at this. I mean, you look at the stat line, and it's, 0-6, and everybody thinks, you know, the quarterback stinks. What is this, Chris Streveler against San Jose State 2.0? But I firmly believe, for all of you mad at Stanford, that we've seen it enough times now with Fleck in here in his tenure at Minnesota, where he just wants to win the game. He doesn't care about the style points. And he was so mad at his receivers that he said, we can beat them on the ground, and that's what we're just going to do.
I would also add that I think that he is more adamant than he being Fleck, right? Because he's the consistency right here, right? We saw this with Shiraka, and we've seen this now with Stanford 2 years in a row. But he's the one consistency throughout that tenure. And especially in the non-conference, he is very committed to making sure that, you know, they rep this and work this, and they don't make mistakes. But it's frustrating to me because
is it infuriating to watch? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you need to trust your fourth year quarterback. You need to trust, like, I get Chris Ottman Bell and Dalen Wright were in the game. Like, we're not playing, but between Daniel Jackson and Michael Brown Stevens, and I guess Brady Boyd would be your third receiver. If you're not going to trust them in the fourth quarter against Miami of Ohio, what happens if you have some injuries in Big Ten play?
Yeah. But yeah, to that point though, like, you still have Brevin Spanford.
Which, where did the tight end go from the passing game plan? Because we saw one schemed catch to Brevin, and I think he got a first down on it, and then no targets further from Brevin. And I don't know what Kokeef has to do to get a target in the passing game. But he is, Jerry, I know you're listening. I mean, he's blocking like an angry ginger, and he is absolutely demolishing people. And as a former collegiate tight end myself, we'll block 80% of the time, but for the love of God, can you throw him a target somewhere in the flat to reward him for banging his head in there so often?
If he stays healthy, and if coaches are truly objective and media are truly objective, he's an all Big Ten player. It's never going to happen, but it's ridiculous.
Especially, I think it's dumb. I'm with you. I would love to see a better run blocking tight end in the Big Ten Conference, which is quite the compliment. But Kokeef is one of the really good ones. I think he might be the best run blocking tight end that I've seen in my 10 or 11 years covering this team.
And he and Falalele have had some just like collapsing blocks together where they just like literally turn the corner. And it's like, you could run through it, Ryan. I couldn't, but you could.
That's because I'm taller. I run like Cam Wiley.
That's right.
But
straight up and down.
Minnesota does end up scoring a touchdown because the edge player doesn't close the gap down because he's worried about potentially Morgan actually running the ball. And Potts goes one-on-one with the safety and gets a touchdown. But I don't understand flex rationale. Again, we heard him after the game. You can watch that or read it. It's free on GI. Just go to the front page, find the Fleck quotes. You'll be able to watch the video too if you want to see what his expressions and emotions and mannerisms are. But it's just, it's frustrating because I feel for Tanner because I think people think that he has the ability to check out of things. No, he doesn't. I mean, that's a PJ Fleck offense for you. And again, you want to be mad at Tanner, you do that. You want to be mad at Mike, you can do that too. But I just think that second half game plan has the fingerprints of the head coach all over it, and it ended up working out as Minnesota won the football game. So as Fleck said afterwards, he's not going to apologize for winning a football game. No matter how ugly it was, absolutely. But I'm also confused about, and we can kind of transition to running back now, is what in the world? Like Trey Potts, we've talked about him for a long time. I thought he was really good. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was really good on Saturday. 34 carries for something crazy, like 178 yards, 2 scores. And you look at the Pro Football Focus grades. I'll give you a little peek behind the paywall there. He forced 10 missed tackles, which is incredibly good. He had over 100 and I think 10 yards after contact, which in Minnesota's offense, if you're going to be a really good running back, you're going to need to have that yards after contact, and you're going to have to make the first guy miss and go from there. But why is he getting 34 carries and the other running backs are just getting neglected? Like, we knew Trey Potts was probably good. Well, we know that for sure now. You can't give Treyson Potts 34 carries a game for the next 10, 11 games, Luke.
Yeah, I don't love the number of carries he got either. I know there's something there are times that it's important that, you know, a running back gets a rhythm, and he obviously was able to get into a rhythm, you know, average 5.2 yards a carry. But I would have liked them to see them mix in some more guys. You know, at the end of this game, Cam Wiley ends up with 3 carries for basically no yards, and Bryce Williams with 2 for -2. So that might be part of why. But, you know, alternatively, you talk up Bucky Irving, you talk up the kid Kai from Thomas, Kansas, Kai Thomas, like,
who is now on a milk carton apparently because he got no run on special teams or on offense, which surprised me a bit. But like, I heard Fleck and Sanford say all week, you know, we're going to look at a bunch of different guys on Saturday. You're going to see us really take a hard look. We're going to go running back by committee. And then it's something I've said on this podcast way too many times now. I feel like my father, when he was scolding me growing up with, I hear what you say, but I trust what you do.
Yeah.
I hear Fleck and I hear Sanford talk about how we're going to use this running back by committee. We're going to give guys different looks. You didn't give Cam Wiley a look. You didn't give Bryce Williams a look. You mixed him in like mid-drive for a couple of plays.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this, Luke. If I know that when Cam Wiley's in the game, it's going to be outside zone, the guys who probably are a lot smarter than me and make a lot more money than me
and watch more
film. It's their job to know that, and they watch a ton more film, probably know that tendency as well.
Yeah.
So if Cam Wiley's just going to be a one-trick pony where he comes in the game and everybody's just going to get to the edges because they know Minnesota's going to try to get there with him, well, then what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the point of Cam Wiley? Or even, again, we didn't see a ton of Bryce Williams, but I would have loved to have seen just give them a series or two. Yes, you know, Trayson Potts maybe only was at 22 carries then instead of 34, and how that impact would have impacted the game, we don't know, unless mm-hmm. Minnesota would have tried. But if you're not going to figure out what you have at running back against Miami of Ohio, you're certainly probably not going to do it next week against a tougher opponent in altitude in Colorado, who gave Texas A&M everything that they could handle.
I would argue that they probably don't have a choice given the altitude, that they'll have to rotate more. Oh, I see what you're trying to make here is like
Fleck just, he wants a workhorse back.
He's risk averse, man. Like,
yeah, and he trusts Trey Potts in that, exactly. Just like he probably trusted Mohamed Ibrahim. But that's great. But you need to find out who else you trust, because Trayson Potts has a long injury history that spans mm-hmm. back to high school with multiple knee surgeries. He's had some injury issues here during his first couple of years. There's no doubt that when Trayson Potts is on the field, he is a very talented running back. You saw that. Again, I think he's a lot more like Rodney Smith than he would be like Mo Ibrahim.
Yeah.
But I like having a Rodney Smith type of back in this offense. I absolutely do.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't handle 30-something carries a game. So we saw Bucky Irving have the entire true freshman experience as he muffs the second kickoff of his career. And then he figures out a way to wiggle out of it and give Minnesota an injection of energy. We can get to that later. But if you don't trust Cam Wiley or Bryce Williams, then give Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving a shot, because you have to find somebody that you can trust for 3-4 series a game to lessen the load of Trayson Potts, because this is still a long season yet. And that young man, it's just, I don't want to have him with that amount of strain on him.
Yeah. And by the way, you need to have a pair and a spare. It's not
it's
just
almost
a,
like
podcast.
There's a podcast.
It's not just a podcast, right?
Look how organic that was.
It's a mantra at this university. So, all right, let's just close this out. Offensive line.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed with the consistency from that group.
No.
Now, again, I don't pretend to be Derek Burns and always my second cousin and all, but that man knows offensive line play much better than I do. But I'll say this. From watching the film and then looking at the PFF grades afterwards, I mean, Curtis Dunlap is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably shouldn't surprise people, considering he's coming off an Achilles tear. He opted out of last year, so he hadn't played in 21 months. But I don't understand the whole rotation thing of mixing him in, because I think it's clear he's the weak link on that line. Now, Blaze Andrews has had some ups and downs. Connor Olson has had some ups and downs. Sam Schluter, even Fa'alele. Because I think what Derek Burns pointed on the last podcast about they need to keep Fa'alele engaged, I don't think he was fully engaged in that game. He was getting pushed off the ball on running plays and against guys he probably has no business getting pushed off the ball from. And that's, again, did Minnesota just want to think at 21-3 at half, some of these guys on the O-line, like, oh, yeah, we can just sleepwalk through this thing. No, you couldn't. But I don't understand the Dunlap thing. Because, you know, we're only, 16-20% of the way through the season, something like that now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Dunlap has consistently been the worst graded offensive lineman, and I believe it. It hasn't been consistent in the run game. He's looked slow. In the pass protection game, it hasn't been good enough, and Tanner's had pressure in his face. But I was surprised overall as a unit, Luke, how much they struggled with stunts and twists.
Yes.
Because that's not anything new for a bunch of guys that have played football a very long time.
If you think back to the 2019 season, right, they struggled big time with stunts and twists, especially early in the non-conference, and they progressed and got better. I thought that they handled the stunts and twists a little bit better against Ohio State, even though that was better talent, but they looked sketchier against Miami of Ohio. And at the end of the day, Ohio State's got some serious athletes, and I know they lost to Oregon and whatnot, but they have skill all over that defensive line, and And this offensive line just was not consistent. They need to rise to the occasion and actually just consistently win. That's where they've struggled, especially against good teams in the past.
Yeah, and that's where you need to have, I think, a better sense of urgency. And I hope that was the wake-up call that group needed,
mm-hmm.
that the third quarter and stretches of the fourth quarter were unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Minnesota needed to salt the game away, I saw the offensive line actually come together and open some holes for the running back.
Yeah.
They should have been doing like they were in the first half.
Yeah, and they consistently still ran into plus one boxes, right? And we got to give Trey Potts some credit. He made a couple of moves, too, towards the end of that game. That sure. sprung him. He had to beat someone, and he did, right? That there was that plus one person, and they were able to do it. But yeah, we need to see some more consistency, but it's got to be married with you have to be able to mix in more pass. You cannot literally just say, like, okay, you're trying to beat this, well, we're still going to do this. You got to take what the defense gives you at the end of the day.
The last thing I want to say about the offense, then we can kind of move on, is I got the sense after the game that Fleck was incredibly, I don't know what the word I want to say is. I'd say annoyed with Dalen Wright, because he wants to see the consistency where you see Dalen Wright make a fantastic sideline catch on an absolute NFL throw from Tanner Morgan, if I may add, rolling to his right, perfectly paced, placed pass 25, 30 yards down the field. You see Dalen Wright make the catch, get a toe tap in, and you're like, wow. I mean, you also see the wow moments against Ohio State on his touchdown. And then you saw him have, I think Fleck would tell you, three or four drops where it's just like, where is the concentration here? Where is the consistency from rep to rep, series to series, quarter to quarter? There's no doubt in anyone's mind, now that you've, I think the entire public has seen Dalen Wright, the kid's got the immense physical talent, as much as anybody that we've seen in that room, probably in the Fleck tenure. Like the physical gifts that he has are incredible. And you've seen that on display. But you've also seen the rawness to him, where that was probably part of the reason he wasn't playing at Texas A&M, is the consistency.
Mm-hmm.
It's with the hands. And again, I don't know that some of these were incredibly tough passes to catch. I mean, we've seen him make the incredible catch, but you got to do it consistency. And you have to have the head coach believe in you, too, where I expect Chris Ottman-Bell back for Colorado. I think we talked when it initially happened, four or five, I don't even remember how many weeks ago it's been. I think this was the game I was telling folks that I'd be eyeing. Now, I saw Chris Ottman-Bell work out before the game. Again, I'm not a medical trainer. I don't pretend to be. But I can assure you, it looked like he was moving much better on that ankle from the Ohio State game. He looked incredibly more fluid. I bet you he's going to be ready to go for Colorado. Sounds like it was bruised ribs for Dalen Wright on that suicide ball from Morgan. I expect both of them back. And if you have Ottman-Bell and Dalen Wright and Daniel Jackson, and then you have Brevin Spanford as a tight end threat, you have four viable, what I think, pass-catching options. Because even on Daniel Jackson's touchdown, Luke, you saw him create the separation, win the race to the goal line. I mean, if you have Brevin Spanford and Daniel Jackson as your wide receiver three and then pass catcher four, I feel good about it, but you're just hoping that the head coach can regain, you know, turn the page and let Sanford do his thing there in the passing game.
One thing that we should highlight before we just come off the offense, just to close this out, is one, they're still scoring a lot of points, 31 points a game. That's good.
I saw somebody comment on one of my tweets today, like, you know, Jackson Howard's never going to come here because of the offense. And I'm thinking to myself, the offense that scored 31 points the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to go to Iowa, where that offense has been incredibly mediocre, but it doesn't matter because they just get defensive touchdown. Yeah. Defensive touchdowns and their special teams is absolutely incredible. Or did they watch the Graham Mertz offense that has been incredibly sad the last 2 weeks as well? I mean, the offense, for all of the struggles that we just highlighted, still put up 31 points and left plenty on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So it's frustrating, but you also can see there's still upside to go with how efficient this offense has been through two games when they get opportunities within the red and the green zone.
Yeah, and they did not have a turnover. That also is an improvement. Obviously, Bucky Irving put the one on the turf, but picked it up himself. But otherwise, that was on a special teams play. But offensively, no turnovers. That's a plus for sure. So room for improvement on offense. There's no question about that. And ultimately, this is very, very stylistically similar to what we saw in 2019. No doubt about that, too. Hoping that we can see improvement against Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to improve upon, but I also think it's going to look a little different if Kurt Sautman Bell's back along with Dalen Wright.
Yep.
Do they still have to lean on somebody not named Trayson Potts in the running game to long term here? Absolutely. And I will ask Fleck about that on Monday, and I will ask Sanford about that on Wednesday, and you can read their quotes on GI.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot. I hear what you say, but I trust what you do. So, I mean, we as the media will ask the questions, but I don't know what has to happen in practice for Fleck and maybe Sanford, and maybe it's even running backs coach Kenny Burns, to get them to believe they can give somebody else 8 to 12 carries a game and to take some of that load off of Trayson Potts.
Again, the Goal Line Club brings you the 2021 season of Gopher Gridiron Radio. Their next event is going to be for the Bowling Green Homecoming Game. That will be September 25th. Tickets for members are $50, and tickets for non-members are $75. Ryan and I, we will be there. We love these events. They're a blast to attend. We often get to meet listeners, and Ryan gets to meet people from GI. So come over and hang out and say hi.
Yeah, it'll open at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning, as it is an 11 a.m. game. I can assure you I will have a screwdriver in my hand. It is unlimited, whatever your drink of choice is, whether that's an adult beverage, a non-adult beverage. You will have Tony's Diner serving you breakfast that morning.
And for the record, Tony's Diner, their strength is breakfast, Ryan.
I would, as someone who lived on campus for quite some time, I can concur with that statement. Again, become a member. It is a tax-exempt donation. The entire purpose of the Goal Line Club is to support the University of Minnesota football program, period. Just the football program. So if you want your money to go to the football program only, highly suggest becoming a member. Highly suggest coming to see us at the Goal Line Club tailgate there at Williams Arena. Have some screwdrivers. Have some Tonys. Have a blast at homecoming. And if you want to learn more, go to goallineclub.org. And if you want to know more about the tailgates, goallineclub.org/events.
All right, Gopher defense. Gave up 26 points on the day. All in all, the first half was great. Only gave up 3. And then the third quarter, there were a few slip-ups there as well, to say the least. Whether it be penalties,
a maddening group. I don't know what to say other than that is you watch the game and I wasn't happy with it. And then I rewatched it and I'm like, they played well, but they just, the glaring Luke, it's very frustrating because they can't help them help themselves, if that makes sense.
At first, like watching the game, I felt like they didn't give up a bunch of explosive plays. They just didn't give up the 60 and 70 yard explosive plays, but they still gave up receptions of 26, 32, and 33 yards. But all in all, I do think it was an improvement. They only gave up 3.5 yards per carry. And frankly speaking, Ryan, the last touchdown was not a touchdown. I can't believe that didn't get overturned. Like, I watched that live. I turned to my dad and I was like, that's not a catch. And we played it back. And he's like, that's definitely not a catch. They're going to overturn this. Next thing you know, kicks through the uprights. We're like, what?
I am gobsmacked, bamboozled. You can use your Gopher Gridiron Radio drinking game word of choice. That wasn't at least looked at, because as Luke mentions, and I have it in the GIF rewinds, that ball does a complete 360 as that kid tries to complete the catch. That's not a catch. And it was never even reviewed, which in this day and age where I feel like everything is reviewed, especially if there's anything nearing a targeting. How that scoring play wasn't reviewed is beyond me. But I think with the defense, Luke, we have to start with the defensive line.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. They were maddening to watch on the rewatch because they are in positions to make plays.
Yeah.
They are getting penetration. They are right there to get a sack or a tackle for loss. And they do 90% of it right, but it's that 10%, Luke, that is so frustrating because they're not finishing it off. They're not getting the tackle for loss that makes it second and 14 versus second and six. Yeah. They're not getting that sack that knocks a Miami team out of field goal range. And the frustrating part about it is it's not just one guy.
Yeah.
Now, I know this because you haven't looked at the PFF grades yet, but Minnesota has zero sacks on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to guess how many pressures? Now, the term pressure can be, a little bit
misleading.
Loose at times in terms of what constitutes pressure when what doesn't.
Well, that's why I think it's misleading, but yeah.
How many pressures do you think PFF credited Minnesota with?
So Rashad Chaney had what should have been a sack, and then somebody else also whiffed.
We can go down the line for defensive linemen who should have had a sack or a tackle for loss in this game and didn't. But Chaney was there. D'Angelo Carter was there.
Yeah.
Sezzi Otemiwu was there. I mean, I can continue to go down the list if you want.
There.
we'll get to him. I think he is not playing up to what expectations have been. But how many pressures do you think PFF?
5.
14.
No way, really?
Now, I don't think some of those were pressures that they probably gave for pressures, but I think realistically on looks like 31 dropbacks for Miami of Ohio, I'd say probably 9 to 10 where there was actual pressure and an opportunity to make a play on the quarterback. And the fact that they went 0 for 8/0 for 9 or even 0 for 10 in terms of converting pressures into sacks, I don't know how to – like. That's incredibly frustrating. And trust me, I rewatched it. You can go back and rewatch the game. I showed like 4 examples from the third quarter alone where Minnesota has an opportunity to step on the throat of Miami of Ohio. Sorry for the graphic nature of that, but just an opportunity to end the momentum. They're right there, and they just don't make the play. They'd have too much momentum, and they go by the quarterback. They just don't slow down enough. I don't know what it is, and I don't know what the solution is to that problem. But we talked, I mean, you mentioned it to me in the pre-production meeting, and you're right that at the end of the day, pressures are great, but you have to start getting sacks. You have to start getting these tackles for losses that are right there for the taking if you just slow down and you just make the tackle. And that was an issue for Minnesota overall was tackling, but I after the game, I wrote in my 5 takeaways, you know, the D-line has to be better, and they do. And I still believe that even after the rewatch. But I do think they weren't as bad as you thought they were in terms of not you, Luke, but I think that the listener. But they were as bad. They're just maddening because it's not one guy that continues to get this pressure and he doesn't get home. It's the entire group is there to make the play, but they're not making the play.
Yeah, right. And the thing is like, you know, Miami of Ohio only 16 to 31 passing the ball, right? They're just right at about 50%. You know, you hold them to about 3.5 yards a carry. You know, they did most everything, but some of those big plays, again, kind of hurt them. The long passes. A few of the penalties were mind-numbingly frustrating. Like, the one that least comes to mind for me was the Donald Willis one, hitting the sliding quarterback. It was like, what are you doing? I know that it's so...
Oh, I was livid in the press box when I saw that one live. I was like, that's just boneheaded.
Yes.
Targeting or not, the guy's sliding.
Yeah.
And I know it's easier said than done, especially when day and age of slow-mo replays say,
he literally
led up. But you led with your noggin, my man.
Yeah. And the other thing is he knew it like mid attempt, right? Where he was trying to pull himself up, and I don't know if they gave him the benefit of the doubt for trying, but he knew it, and then he just puts his hands on his head. But I mean, there are a number of different situations where it was frustrating, and they had guys in position. Like I'm thinking of the touchdown over Coney Durr. He's right there and couldn't make the play. And
The theme of the day for the Gopher defense, and that's where I'm thinking to myself, because I've heard so many Fleck press conferences over the years, especially with poor defense, unfortunately, that Fleck looks at two things. Is it schematic? Is it execution? And I don't think it's schematic issues with Rossi's defense. I don't. Guys are in position to make plays, but they're not making the plays, and that's the issue. In 2019, you knew who the playmakers were.
Yeah.
And they were Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin, Antoine Winfield. You can go back even further. Breann Body Calhoun, Damian Wilson. Mm-hmm. Like, you knew who your impact guys were. And to Luke's point on those, you know, on these long pass plays near the goal line or in the end zone that Miami all converted, which again, they were great passes, no doubt. But it's so infuriating to watch Terrell Smith play as well as you possibly can. He's got his head turned. He's staring at the ball. And then he doesn't play the ball. And Sorensen goes up for a touchdown catch. It's like, buddy, you worked so hard to put yourself in this position to be right there, to just put an arm up, bat it away, or go up with two and make the play for an interception. And you don't make it. Or even Coney Durr on the Mac Hippenhammer non-touchdown that was a touchdown. He's right there. It's a great throw. But again, you are right there to make the play. And you're not making the play. And that's kind of what you've talked about for a long time with Fleck defensive recruiting. And is, where are the playmakers?
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys on this defense that do their job, but you need more guys that are going to do their job and then some to really have those impactful plays.
Yeah. And for you, like, I'm trying to pick out who is the guy that's going to make plays. I have one guy in mind right now. But for you, who is the guy that you feel like is the one you could maybe say is going to make plays? It's hard. I have one.
We can talk about Tyler Newbin more in depth here in a sec, but I loved what I saw from that kid.
He's the one that I think is the only one that's making plays right now.
I mean, here's what I'll say. Mariano and Jack Gibbons made plays in run defense, and they're a large part of why Miami couldn't really run the ball at all. But my issue is Mariano is a liability in pass coverage, and he's playing 95 to 100% of the snaps, or at least he has in the first two games.
He peaks.
And I don't get it.
He peaks so bad, especially in zone.
So hard on whatever the first thing is. And the issue is, like, let's talk about it, where I think it's Boye Mafe gets tackled from behind, and it's a holding call, but then Mariano, so it's third and forever.
Right.
And, I mean, the D lineman gets tackled from behind and the quarterback scrambles to the home sideline, throws it down the field. Mariano gets hit with a PI. So instead of third and forever, and now it's just a replay of the down. And there's just been too many times where it has surprised me Rossi's willingness to continue to throw him in there. Now, I don't know that nothing really surprises me with Rossi and Mariano at this point, but Mariano was an absolute positive in the run game. Mm-hmm. He was, without a doubt. He was very good in whether it was actually tackling the guy, setting an edge, being impactful near the line of scrimmage in the run game. I'm saying that this is me trying to say on first and second down, yeah, sure, Mariano in there.
Mm-hmm.
But third down, why don't we see what we got in Braylon Oliver with Jack Gibbons? Or why don't we see what we have for Donald Willis or Cody Lindenberg or James Gordon? Because I think I've seen enough of Mariano in coverage where I know it ain't going to go great, but I haven't seen enough of Cody Lindenberg in coverage to know that, or Braylon Oliver in coverage to know that. I mean, I think it would surprise some people to know Donald Willis actually outsnapped Braylon Oliver at linebacker this past week.
Yeah, I noticed him in quite a bit. And, you know, Oliver made that really nice pass breakup. on the tight end, right? The big hit there.
Smoked him.
Yeah.
Absolutely smoked him.
Yeah.
Which Braylon's more athletic in that instance, in that kind of pass, in that role in terms of in pass coverage.
Do you think, okay, this is just a theory. Do you think that, at least on the defensive side, part of it is, it's not so much that Mariano is like a favorite of Rossi as much as it, they want leaders to be out on the field and they view him as a leader.
Yeah. I mean, as dumb as that sounds, probably Fleck loves Mariano. So yeah. Does Rossi. And they think right. He's the leader of the defense. And so right. They think he needs to be out there to justify maybe some things. Again, I'm not, yeah. I feel like, again, it's turning into let's rip Mariano show when yeah, he sorry. Played well in this game, but I'm just saying, let's take him out on passing downs and let somebody else do some things in coverage. I'd also say you're talking about guys who I think can make plays. MJ Anderson is playing his backside off right now. And he's only playing, I think he played like 35% of the snaps, where it says he got more. So it's like a 65-35 type of split. I mean, when MJ was in there, man, that'd be number three in the program's number one in Luke Buehr's heart. he's pressing guys back. He's setting an edge. He's turning the corner.
Yeah.
Now, he's another guy where he'd get really close to making the big play, but just like everybody else in the Gopher D-line, he couldn't quite finish. But I think this needs to be more towards a 50-50 between him and Asezi, because we've seen Asezi now. And I can tell you, you know, the pressures and everything.
He looks good off the bus.
He's setting the edge in the run game, but he is just not making. He's in position to make plays, just like a lot of these other guys are, and we've seen it now for years where he can't quite get home.
Mm-hmm.
So can MJ Henderson start to figure it out and get home more often for that impactful tackle for loss, or that impactful strip sack, or just sack in general? I don't know, but I want to see more of it to find out. And I think the other hot take I'd have is I think Thomas Rush has been better than Boye Mafe through two games. And I think that's a kudos to Thomas Rush.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think this needs to be a wake-up call for Boye. Because the athletic talents are – I've talked about him at length. I mean, I made the bold prediction. I thought he was going to get to 10 sacks, and he'd be the first Gopher defensive lineman to do that since Willie VanDesteeg. I mean, he still could. But he needs to – I don't know what the issue is with Boye right now, but Thomas Rush is deserving all of the snaps that he's getting, and he probably deserves a little bit more right now.
Okay, we got to talk defensive backfield a little bit here. We touched on Newbin. I think Newbin's been playing well. He's much improved.
First, that was the best game of Tyler Newbin's young career. Whether you want to talk – I mean, he was – I haven't seen a Gopher safety play that well in terms of in pass coverage with the amount of one-on-one opportunities he had. Mm-hmm. Since I'm sure there's a Winfield game somebody could pick out back in the day, maybe Cedric Thompson going way back there.
That's not that far back, but yeah.
I mean, yes, but again, it's Miami of Ohio, Ryan. I get it. You're excited about a but you see what it can look like with him.
Mm-hmm.
He was thrown at six times, five incompletions, and one interception. I mean, that's outstanding. And he was great in run support as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what you want in a safety without Jordan Howden in there, of which, you know, from talking with some sources around them, Howden could have gone, absolutely. But Mr. Risk Averse and PJ Fleck wanted to make sure that if he was at 97%, which I think he was probably somewhere around there, that he wanted him 100% for Colorado next week.
Yeah.
Howden didn't play. Like, if things would have continued to go haywire and, say, Michael Dixon didn't play well, which I think Michael Dixon in his first career start actually played much better, like, you would have seen Jordan Howden there. But, I mean, what else is there to say about the corners, though? I mean, the corners are in positions to make plays.
We got to talk about the corners, because if you're a corner and not named Coney Durr, you got to tackle better.
Oh, yeah. Justice Harris.
Yes. I was really bummed that Wally went out, because at a certain point, you got to ask yourself, like, if Justice Harris isn't tackling, What are we doing?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I do believe that was a concussion protocol thing for Waller.
I know. That's why I was bummed that he ended up being hurt.
I believe he got his helmet taken away on the sidelines. So for everybody wondering what the deal was there, that's the deal. But to your point, Luke, if Justice Harris can't tackle, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Now, you say Wally, I tell you, it ain't going to be Wally who comes in the slot there.
Who's it going to be?
It's going to be Saul Brown or it's going to be Bishop McDonald. But we've talked about for years how Justice Harris, not great in coverage, and he wasn't again against Miami.
No.
But his thing had been he's been a sure tackler.
How?
Now, he had a bad game and he missed some really key tackles. But... And I get he's a hard worker and I get he's earned every opportunity. But at the same point, like if he's not tackling, what are we doing here? And why isn't Saul Brown or why isn't Bishop McDonald getting a shot here?
Honestly, too, though, how did he come away with that ball and that fumble in the first drive?
I never saw a good camera angle on that. I have no idea how the quarterback has
didn't fall on it.
Everybody's just in this rugby scrum. And then you see the angle of, oh, the football just appears at the edge of the pile. It just magically appears. And Justice Harris is the only one that finds it. Now, perfect world, Justice. You look around, see no one's noticing. You scoop and score. That's SOB.
Well, I don't know if he could have, but yeah, I definitely know what you're saying.
I don't think anybody in the world knew that ball was there except Justice Harris. Honest to goodness. But yes, I mean, he comes away with a big turnover there. I don't even know who forced it. Not sure how it happened, but... To your point, Justice Harris, my man, you got to tackle better. And if you don't, what are we doing here with Joe Harris-Emiak and Joe Rossi with that position? And the outside guys, like we said, they're there. They're putting themselves in the perfect position to make the play. The head's turned. I've seen it. I watched it. I watched it back. They just aren't making the plays. And you just need, just like with the D-line and the same thing with these corners, you're right there. Might as well go make the play. Might as well finish it for a pass breakup or an interception. Might as well finish it for a tackle for loss or a sack. You're already there. Might as well do it. I just don't know how you – I don't know how you can quantify that into a solution. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, they're there. Right there.
Yeah.
To make the play. Or even, you know, we got to talk about the Rashad Chaney roughing the passer too.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it's 31-20 at midfield. Minnesota's got an 11-point lead, 4 minutes left. And all, you shove the guy going out of bounds. Now, again, I don't want to get into the argument. What, you know, is it a flag? Is it not a flag? Is it a flag today versus 10 years ago? You know, refs are soft nowadays. I don't want to get into that. But the point I'm trying to make here is if he just doesn't push him, just lets up and runs past him, Newbin breaks that up. Minnesota gets the ball with 4 minutes left at midfield, and it's 31-20. I would like to think Minnesota just runs the ball all the way home, and it's a 38. Say Minnesota scores on that drive. It's 38-20, and Minnesota wins. And now not everybody in the world is as angry at this football team as they are, but one stupid shove, and the entire thing is flipped on its head.
Yeah.
It's one stupid shove, and Minnesota's got it 31-20 at midfield with 4 minutes left in the game, and they just run the crap out of the ball home, and it's a two-touchdown lead. But you can't have that happen if you're Rashad Chaney.
No, I'm with you. You know, defensively, there's obviously opportunities to improve. There are obviously also opportunities to maybe get some guys some more run. It's going to be an interesting... It's going to be an interesting thing to watch and see it develop, because defensively, this is probably what's going to dictate how this season goes. They still have to improve. I think the offense has the potential. I don't maybe see the potential as much defensively, but they need some playmakers. I mean,
you see the potential in terms of, like, the scheme is sound. And with Rob Smith, it wasn't sound. And yes, now we could get into it with Joe Rossi and flex defensive recruiting in year five. Sure. But it's just like if guys they're right there.
Yeah.
They just didn't do it against Miami. And if they start to do that like 30% more, I can't stress to you how the cosmetic appearance of this defense will change. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think schematically against Ohio State, they were out of position, right? And part of that is the athletes are going to exploit that. But yes, I understand what you're saying. It's better than, it's definitely better. The skill thing is, the talent acquisition piece is a totally different conversation separate from here. I still think they've struggled mightily there. But I like, they have some players. Like Newbin's going to be, I think Newbin's going to be a player. I think Rashad Chaney is going to be a player. I think MJ Anderson is going to be a player, but they just we have just to, need they to see it.
I mean, you just got to make plays, and that's where it's going to be a lot different this upcoming weekend when they go play Colorado, because Colorado doesn't have a passing game. They're on their third quarterback in terms of what they thought they were going to be going into the year. Their first stringer, Trent, we'll get into this in the preview, but like the guy that thought was going to be the starter transferred to Oregon State, the number two that was in the projected starter going into fall camp, tore his knee. And so they got their third string quarterback, who is a really good athlete, but completing a forward pass for them, whether it was Northern Colorado or Texas A&M, has been a struggle. So we're going to really find out how much better this run defense has gotten, because between a running quarterback and the reigning Pac-12 offensive player in the year, and Jarek Broussard is a running back, this defense is going to be tested. So we're going to find out, can guys start making some plays here? Because they're going to need to do that on Saturday if they're going to emerge from Boulder with a victory.
Ryan, it's once again time for Gopher Math. And if there's one thing I've learned since we've started doing this, one, we need to learn how to spell errors for people, because I think they're struggling to find this. Again, this is Ayers Rock Planning that sponsors Gopher Math. Ayers is A-Y-E-R-S, and I think you can spell rock at this point. And the other thing is, like, what, Ryan, have you ever had to go and get a physical at the doctor?
I'd love to know where this is going, but I absolutely have.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is you probably should get a physical when it comes to your finances, because at the end of the day, that's what Ayers Rock is going to do for you. They're going to take a look at your finances for you, your family, and the goals and what risks you might take on without even knowing it. Right. So make sure you talk to a tax professional, like they are. And, you know, most tax professionals, they just fill in boxes. You know, it's an important job, but these people are hired to make a plan to help you reduce your taxes over multiple generations. So go to Ayers Rock Planning for more information. They will help you save money on something that is really important, your taxes, because they take a lot of your money.
Like I've talked about along for the duration of this, I am an independent contractor. And if you are potentially, say, a business owner or like myself and you have a 1099, it is oh so important to have someone comb through your taxes to make sure you're getting the most amount net. And I can't tell you how many thousands of dollars I've saved from someone like the people at Ayers Rock Planning. So if you want to learn more, Luke, what's the website one more time?
AyersRockPlanning.com. All right. So for Gopher Math, again, you get 2 months of free GI behind the paywall. You can check out those GIF rewinds. You can check out the PFF grades, etc. So the Gopher Math question for this week is, Gopher's second half passing yards in the Miami of Ohio game. Plus, all right,
that shouldn't be tough.
Nope.
Good, yep.
Plus,
I'm doing it in my head here.
All right. Trey Potts rushing attempts.
Okay.
Plus yards of Tanner Morgan's longest run.
I'm still there with you.
Minus Dylan Wright's longest reception.
Okay.
Divided by Minnesota's punts downed inside the 20. If you want to hear that again, just rewind this. Again, Ayers Rock Planning. You need to tag Ayers Rock Plan. Is it Ayers? It's Ayers Rock on Twitter.
Ayers, A-Y-E-R-S, Rock Plans, all one word on Twitter. Tag myself, tag Gopher Radio, and use the hashtag Gopher Math. And I think it's funny, Luke, because we've done this now a few weeks. It's either people get it immediately before we haven't even like tweeted out the podcast.
Yes.
Or it was like 4 days later. So if you want your 2 free months to come chill with me behind the paywall, or if you're an existing member, if you want 2 more months added on to your current subscription, It's a fantastic opportunity to do so. So figure out that number. And then if you want to know, has it been claimed already? Has it not? I would encourage following Ayers Rock Plans on Twitter, because they will quote tweet whoever was the first one, and they will handle things with you from there.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the special teams. Ryan, another plus special teams, in my opinion. Like, honestly, this was a plus on the special teams. I think I have to imagine you could not be more elated with a 50-yard field goal. First, you are waiting for a 40-yard field goal, something like 1,000 days, right? Something absolutely absurd. And now you've gotten a 50-yard field goal. I think it's safe to say so far, Matthew Trickett has been as advertised.
It had been 143 weeks since Minnesota had made a 50-yard field goal or longer. It had been 35 months, almost 36 months technically. It had been since September of 2018 when Emmett Carpenter made a 50-yard field goal. And for Trickett to do it in a big spot there to put Minnesota back up by over a touchdown was huge. And he has been as advertised. Every extra point, we haven't had to worry like Minnesota lost games at times last year with that. I mean, Trickett's been good, and I love it. And again, it's funny because I get my brand of special teams now, Luke. And so people are like during the games, like, you know, how elated are you? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, this is what it's supposed to look like, folks. You've just been so accustomed to expecting the worst, whether that's because of the numerous different special teams gaffes from the professional team or the collegiate team over the years. But I am loving what I am seeing from the MAC transfer kicker of the year in Matthew Trickett.
All right. Where is Crawford's holding, right?
Yes.
Yep. He did have a really nice hold on one of the extra points. It wasn't a great snap that resulted in a make. I want to give him credit there, but where do you sit on Crawford punting now? This game, 5 punts for 191 yards.
Are you going to be mad at me if I'm a bit negative here?
Well, he had two inside like the 20. Mark, he had two inside the 20. Give, I mean, that's, he needs the credit there. It maybe wasn't as good as it could have been, but
no, like, here's what I'm going to say. Mark Crawford's going to give you a 37-yard punt if you need a 37-yard punt. Mark Crawford's going to give you a 37-yard punt if you need a 54-yard punt.
Yeah.
Like, Mark Crawford is as good. I mean, he is Jacob Herbers-esque with being able to pin people inside the 10 if Minnesota's near midfield.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is if Minnesota needs you to flip the field, it ain't happening with Crawford. Mm-hmm. And that's where I talked about it this morning on Gopher Football Sunday with Justin Gard, which if for some ungodly reason you're up at like 8:15 on Sunday mornings.
Hey, some of us that the young kids are. I was up since 5:50, so.
Okay, well, if you want to hear some Gopher football talk from two schmoes named Justin Gard.
We listen. My son doesn't pay attention at all.
Tune in to KFAN there, 100.3, or you can go to KFAN.com/listen to hear our kind of immediate after-the-game thoughts. But that's where I suggested him, why not throw out there the Louisiana Monroe punter transfer and Daniel Sparks if you need to have somebody potentially flip the field? Because that was Daniel Sparks'
situational
calling card.
Punting, yeah.
Have two punters. Have one be the guy to flip the field. Have one be the guy to pin him inside.
Sure.
Like Daniel Sparks at Louisiana Monroe, I think he had, oh my goodness, you're going to make me look this up. I got to see how many 50-yard punts he had. But he had like a 47-yard average as a freshman. And then he transfers to Minnesota here this past offseason. I mean, you tell me while I look up Daniel Sparks' punting stats. I mean, this is how hardcore we are on this podcast,
but is it
crazy to have a two punter system?
No, I don't think it's crazy at all. I think it's one of the odd situations. And it's not like the situation where if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback, right? Like it's just not like that. I think having two punters would be fine. I'd be all for trying that. But generally Crawford does a pretty good job when he needs to pin a team inside the 20. He just needs to do a little bit better.
No doubt. I just don't think he has the leg.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, Iowa's Australian punter can do both.
He's incredible.
He is. I mean, I'm incredibly envious. But I look at last year, and as a freshman at Louisiana Monroe, The young man had five or six punts over 50 yards, including multiple 60-yard punts. So if you, you know, you take it at the 25 and you go three and out and you're punting from the 33, I can tell you the opposing team's going to probably take over about the 40 where with Mark Crawford. Let's see if, what the young man from Louisiana Monroe's got and see if he can't pin him back, because I feel confident in the coverage team that they can actually make the play. You know, I talk about all the time how Luke and I, with our significant others, have outkicked our coverage. Mm-hmm. Well, I think Minnesota's got a pretty decent coverage team, and I don't think – I would love to have the problem to have that Minnesota's punter is literally, for every meaning of the phrase, outkicking his coverage. So, again, I don't know, just throwing out ideas. I'd love to see Daniel Sparks out there as Minnesota tries to flip field position. But Mark Crawford is very, very good in terms of pinning guys inside the 10 if you're near midfield. Absolutely.
All right, just to close on special teams, we touched on this earlier. We returned a kick, and Bucky Irving is probably your kick returner going forward. Tell me I'm wrong.
I wouldn't. Unless Bucky Irving becomes the guy that's going to be your number two back and he's going to get 8 to 10 touches a game. But even still, that was the complete kickoff return experience, by the way. He returns two kicks. And on the two kicks, Minnesota has a net compared to just a fair catch of 2 yards. They gained 2 yards of total field position, I believe. Because Bucky Irving's first one, he returns it to the 21, minus 4 compared to a fair catch. And why would not, a holding call backs you all the way up to the 11. Yeah, so you lost 14 yards of field position. And then Bucky has the, as I talked about earlier, the incredibly true freshman experience. He muffs it, recovers, bounces it out to the right, injects some life into this team that really needed it, takes it out to, I think, the 41. Oh, boy, I better get that right. And so that's a 16-yard net compared to a fair catch. 16 minus 14 gives you 2 yards of net. So it's like you see the good, you see the bad. But, yeah, against Miami of Ohio, like I talked about, absolutely, give it a shot. And that's why, I mean, that's why you wanted him to kind of take that one out, where this team needed something. Give it some life. And that's where I thought that Bucky Irving kick return did. But, again, they hit the first one, really not good. The second one, you see what the ramifications can be if you have a decent return man. Which I can assure you the blocking was not there. He made something out of nothing, Luke.
Yeah, we should mention that if my notes are correct, every time he returned a kick, the two kicks he returned, the Gopher scored a touchdown. I'm just saying, could be a strategy going forward.
I don't know that that's a correlation, but I'd also say I love Dragan Kesich.
Yeah, he does a good
kick
job.
Kick it out of the end zone every time.
Yep.
And now they have a kicker who can finally do it.
Yep.
So I'm excited to continue to watch Dragan for the remainder of the next few years of him as the kickoff specialist.
Yeah, definitely want to see the special teams continue to be a plus and not a negative in these games going forward. All right, Ryan, we need to get a word in from our favorite insurance agent, your dad, Bill Burns from Insurance by Burns.
Yes, the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Bill Burns. He was just at the game here again on Saturday. He is a huge Gopher fan, and I can tell you, growing up with him and even still true to this day, the man loves to shop. Now, I'm not talking about the Mall of America or Amazon Prime. I'm talking about shopping your insurance rates for the best coverage and price for you. And that's the benefit of having an independent insurance agent. He has access to over 20 different insurance companies to shop for the best coverage for you at the best price. Now, as someone who is a current client of the Burns Insurance Agency, I can tell you, while the insurance company, in terms of whether it's Travelers or State Farm or whomever it may change year to year, your coverage will remain at a top tier and the price will be the best one you can find in the market. So let the Burns Insurance Agency do the insurance shopping for you this year. Head to insurancebyburns.com or shoot him an email at bill@insurancebyburns.com. He is a gigantic Gopher fan, and he wants to make sure you, the Gopher football fan, are getting the best bang for your buck with your insurance. So if you want to learn more, insurancebyburns.com.
close out the podcast, let's look a little bit at where the Big Ten is lined up. In the West right now, Iowa takes a commanding lead, in my opinion.
Iowa is so frustrating to watch, by the way.
They're not fun to watch, but you know what? They've been effective.
Their offense is so sad, but it doesn't matter because their special teams is so incredible. And they have three defensive touchdowns through two games against two ranked teams. And it's like, that cannot be sustainable, but it doesn't matter, apparently, because yes, for those of you who have asked me, my Iowa takes from like 3 weeks ago, boy, do they seem ludicrous. Now, again, a lot of season left. We'll see how Iowa continues to ebbs and flows and how they, again, averaging 1.5 defensive touchdowns per game.
Yeah, they've been very not sustainable. Yeah.
But like Iowa is, well, you look at the poll, Luke, they're the number 5 team in the country right now.
Yeah, they definitely are. Shockingly, probably to most, Illinois currently sits in second because they're the only other team with a Big Ten win.
Who just dismantled them last week?
I'm aware with who dismantled them. I'm just telling you.
Former Golden Gopher football commit Brendan Armstrong threw for like 405 touchdowns, had the game of his life.
Yeah, he looked really good. Also, that tight end is massive. Then we have Purdue at 2-0, Nebraska at 2-1, Minnesota at 1-1, Northwestern, Wisconsin also at 1-1. I think it's safe to say right now Iowa has the upper hand. They played arguably two of their tougher games, coming out victorious. By the way, do you have any thoughts on Iowa State wearing black against Iowa?
That was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen, because Iowa, like Iowa fans, what are they going to wear? Black in the stands.
Yeah.
So you have black, I thought it was incredibly stupid, especially because it wasn't even a night game.
Well, here's the thing. I turned the game on and it took me a minute to know which team was which. Like I had to work to figure it out. One, because like that's Iowa's color, black, right?
Yeah, I would love to know how Matt Campbell approved that, because ultimately the final say goes to the head coach. And it's like, that's what you decided to go with. Also, can we talk about how Matt Campbell cannot get over Kirk Ferentz? He's now 0-5.
He and PJ could commiserate together. And Matt Campbell gets so much love, and rightfully so, but one thing, Big Ten's just a little bit better than the Pac-12. I'll just say that. the Big 12. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably say the Big Ten's also better than the Pac-12, but I guess we'll find out here this weekend between two teams that are probably projected to be in the middle of the pack. And that's where, through 2 weeks, I think the Big Ten West specifically is what we thought, where I think it's Iowa and Wisconsin. And then I think there's, until Minnesota can prove consistency, they're in a tier below them. And then I'd say there's a tier below Minnesota of Northwestern, Nebraska, Purdue, and Illinois. I mean, Northwestern is bad.
Yes.
And that's what we thought they were going to be because they lost so many people.
Yeah.
I will be incredibly curious to see how Nebraska looks against Oklahoma this weekend. I think I know that one's going to go, but we'll find out. I mean, Purdue just beat the living snot out of the worst team in college football in UConn. I hope they can do that. And then Illinois looks like a year one football team with a brand new head coach. And so that's where it's like trying to put it in perspective, Luke. Like, yeah, Iowa looks fantastic, no doubt. I mean, Wisconsin, they look like Wisconsin. They play really good defense, and they have an anemic offense. But
well,
it's like
they haven't always had an anemic offense, but yes, they do have one this year, it seems.
I mean, the last couple of years now, their offense has been not great. But the point I'm trying to make is I can hear, and again, I think I've spent way too much time around Fleck now, where it's like all I can hear is comparison, steal your joy. And that's where, like, don't compare Minnesota to Iowa yet. Don't compare Minnesota to Wisconsin yet, because Minnesota doesn't play either one of those teams for like another 9 weeks. Minnesota is going to look a lot different in 9 weeks. Iowa's going to look a lot different than 9 weeks. So is Wisconsin. So we can make those comparisons when those games come in November. But let's just take it 1 week at a time, because as you saw throughout college football, I mean, you thought you had a bad week. Look at Florida State losing on the last play of the game to one of Luke's favorite schools, Jacksonville State. Like, it's college football. Weird stuff happens every week. Just emerge with a victory and just move on to the next week.
I think this year in college football is even weirder than normal, though.
Because of the lack of anything last year?
Well, I mean, sure. But, okay, so number one, Alabama is in a tier kind of all by themselves, right? Like, they're kind of all alone. And then basically from there, it's almost like anybody can beat anybody. I almost truly believe that. You look at Texas A&M, who's supposed to be number five. Go.
I watched some of that Colorado Texas A&M game. I don't think Texas A&M is all that. I don't know. You can use your euphemism. I don't know. I don't think they're that. I mean, I think they're incredibly athletically gifted, but especially after, like, there needs to be context for that game last week. A&M starting quarterback got knocked out in the first series. So they were playing with their backup the entire time against Colorado. Now, Colorado's got a good defense. We'll get into that later. But, yes, it's like Alabama. You saw the warts of Ohio State.
Yeah. I
mean, you've seen the warts of Oklahoma. Texas just lost to Arkansas. You saw Oregon make some ways against Ohio State. We'll see if they can continue to figure it out. And then Notre Dame, everybody's favorite independent.
Yeah.
They got taken to the absolute wire by another MAC team, the Mid-American Conference, in case anybody was wondering if I changed my best. It's college football. Like, the transitive property is one I hate that people love to use. Do you know what the transitive property is there, Luke?
I don't know the specific one you're referencing.
Well, it would be, you know, Minnesota beat.
Oh, sure.
You know, Miami of Ohio beat this team, so that means Minnesota could beat. I mean, no. Because we're dealing with teenagers and young adults every single week. You just don't know what you're going to get unless you're Nick Saban in Alabama.
Okay.
So, yes, the rest of the West is really, like, Iowa and Wisconsin look, you know, especially Iowa looks very good right now. But let this thing breathe, man. Let this thing continue to ebb and flow. And let's see where the chips continue to lie one week at a time.
All right. Just real quick, I'm going to give you three teams in the East, and I want you to tell me if this is a mirage or if this is real, okay? Michigan State.
I don't know what to think about. I know that's the whole point, is you trying to... Here, what do you think? What do you think?
I kind of want to lean real, but it feels more mirage to me at this point.
I'm trying to look at their
I'm surprised.
We will find out a lot about them this upcoming week. They have to go down to Miami and play the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think Miami's all that in a box. I don't think Miami's all that in a box of chocolates, but it's also like you look at their schedule after that. It's like Nebraska, Western Kentucky, Rutgers, Indiana. I think it's mirage in terms of I don't think they're a contender. I don't think they win eight games, but I could see them definitely winning six.
Okay, let's be real honest. The East is Penn State, Ohio State, maybe Michigan, maybe. I'm not sure. Okay.
All right, what else you got?
Yeah. Maryland. Also receiving AP votes, by the way.
Why? Because they beat West Virginia and then they stomped on Howard?
Here's
what I'm saying. This is what was supposed to happen. Like they had West Virginia at home, Howard at home. They're going to beat Illinois in Champaign next week, and then they play Kent State. And then guess what happens in October? It gets real. They have to play Iowa at home, Ohio State on the road. That's apparently, as you look at the standings today, two top 10 teams.
Mm-hmm.
They get a bye week, and then they have to come to Minnesota. They've also got Penn State still on the schedule, Michigan still on the schedule, Indiana. So, I mean, do I think Maryland's a legitimate 8-9 win team? No, I do not. But I think that offense with Taulia and those receivers is definitely legit. I just have a lot of questions about them defensively still.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, Rutgers. I got mirage there.
Well, what's the expectation? Like, are they going to beat Delaware next week? Yes.
Right.
But then they get Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Northwestern. Like I think Rutgers offense is bad.
Yeah.
I think Rick Schiano's defense is good, but like the fact that they beat Syracuse the way that they did with like something stupid, like 200 yards of total offense.
Right.
It's like, you need to have more offensively if you're going to actually be a legitimate contender. And I don't think Rutgers is there. Mm-hmm.
Who you got winning the East at this point?
Ohio State.
Still.
Yep.
Okay.
Again, I think, well, it's fun. So the stat that I sent Justin Gard was that Iowa put up 27 points and Ohio State put up 28 on Saturday. Okay. You with me?
I'm following.
Iowa scored 27 points on 173 yards of offense, which...
Yes.
Bad. Ohio State scored 28 points on 612.
Yeah.
Which is also bad because if you score... I mean, if you put up 612 yards, you should be scoring at least 38, if not 40-something points.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like... That offense is still going to put up stupid points. And I look at that schedule and it's like, I mean, I will believe it when I see it, when Jim Harbaugh and that Michigan offense does not look good, by the way. I still think Ohio State can outscore them. It's going to come down to, can Sean Clifford and Penn State figure it out and make them a two-loss team? Because I think, I still think it's Ohio State. I mean, do you think, you must be thinking Penn State maybe?
I think Penn State is the only one that's got a shot. I probably lean with you, Ohio State, but I'm definitely given. I mean, Penn State's got a, you know, has a game advantage at this point. No, they don't. I'm sorry, because their conference record's the same. Yeah, I think you're probably right. Ohio State probably wins that.
So, but again, we only have two data points of the 12 that are coming in. That's 1/6 of the season, which, if my University of Minnesota education / Tartan High School math is correct, it's like 16% of the season, roughly.
Yeah,
We're gonna learn a lot more.
Yeah, I don't get the infatuation still with Iowa. They're still receiving AP votes. I think the early AP voting is ridiculous. But
what do you mean you don't get the early infatuation? I mean, they have two ranked wins. I mean, this is me somehow.
Oh no! I'm sorry. I meant Indiana. I said Iowa, but I mean Indiana. Yeah. Sorry, Indiana. That was a flub on my side.
I am incredibly curious to see how this thing continues to go for Iowa, because that offense is bad. Now, Iowa State's defense and Indiana's defense, they might be good. Last year they were good. But, like,
yeah,
I have a lot of questions about that offense outside of Tyler Goodson, because I haven't seen it with Spencer Petras. I haven't seen it with that receiving core. And can Iowa continue to win games 17-10?
Sure.
But, boy, is that continue to put so much stress on that defense that they have to continue to show up every week. Yeah. So. And I'm going to be super curious.
They force 7 turnovers. And, you know, one, they're opportunistic, no question, right? But like,
I just don't think that many turnovers and that many big plays as a defensive unit is
sustainable. Yeah, I hear you on that.
There's just no way.
And the other thing is the touchdowns, I just don't believe are sustainable. Maybe you can average forcing 2 turnovers a game, but it doesn't seem like it's sustainable that you're going to basically score. Is that 2 touchdowns in 2 games in a row now defensively?
I think they only scored the one, which was the scoop and score.
It was only one in the first game.
Yeah, and then can you watch those turnovers that Brock Purdy had, like deflection off the hands. And it's just like, Iowa guy just happens to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Iowa guys know how to make defensive plays.
Yeah,
Minnesota, you might want to find out how they continue to be in the right place at the right time and then actually get home. So. I'm excited for this Colorado game this weekend because we're
going
to learn a lot more about each one of these teams. Now, the Vegas line, Minnesota opens as a -3 favorite, so a 3-point favorite. It swings all the way to Colorado -3, a 6-point swing, which is, in the betting world, incredibly, incredibly massive. And now it has come kind of back towards the middle, where the last I saw it, it's a pick 'em. So we'll get into that game more in depth here on Wednesday. But, Luke, I think the last thing I want to say is everybody take a deep breath. It was a very stressful second half on a game that didn't need to be that stressful.
Were you really stressed? Because I actually never was stressed. I actually thought I was pretty confident the whole way.
Twitter makes me so...
Oh, I didn't look at Twitter this game because I watched it from behind. I was on delay, so...
Yeah, that's where part of the gig is you're tweeting it live and you're seeing the mentions and everything, and people are, as they tend to be on social media, very upset and kind of raises... But like if Minnesota pulls that against Bowling Green, who is bad, like legitimately bad.
Yeah, you got
then
problems.
Yes, we have a lot of things that we're going to have to discuss before that Purdue game that next weekend in October. But new week, new season. We'll talk about it later this week for Colorado, Luke.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Again, we want to thank Ayers Rock Planning, the Goal Line Club, and Insurance by Burns. Hope to have you listen to our preview against Colorado. Thanks for listening, and go Gophers.